described by a judge as an extremely dangerous psychopath, has been given life in jail for a double murder. Stephen Farrow stabbed Reverend John Seddards 7 times in his home in South Gloucestershire last February. DNA evidence later linked him to the murder of 77-year-old Betty Yates a month before at her cottage in Worcestershire. Her son David gave this reaction.
We should all be relieved and thankful that Stephen Farrow is off the streets of Britain today. It is clear from his own words that had he not been caught, he would have continued to kill others and leave more misery in his wake.
A man found guilty of beating a toddler to death has been jailed for life. 23-year-old Daniel Rigby, who denied murdering his girlfriend's son, will serve a minimum of 17 years. The boy's mother, Kirsty Smedley, was also convicted for failing to stop the abuse. Becky Johnson is at Manchester Crown Court.
Little Rio Smedley, just 2 years old, had 91 separate injuries when he died, bruises all over his little body. That, the court heard, was the result of extreme blunt force trauma, kicks and punches.
Teams looking for missing vet Catherine Going have sealed off an area near Chester. North Wales police say they found more human remains after a separate discovery yesterday. Former Labour Minister Dennis McShane has quit as MP for Rotherham in the wake of an expenses scandal. A Westminster sleaze watchdog found he fraudulently claimed around £7,000 before 2008. Disgraced tycoon Azil Nadir has been ordered to pay £5 million in compensation to the administrators of Polypec International or face an extra 6 years in prison. He's already serving a 10-year sentence for stealing nearly £29 million from his company. And the Foreign Office has raised its terror threat level for UK citizens in Egypt. It says there's now a severe risk of an attack. Tourists are warned not to stray outside well-guarded resorts. That's the latest. I'm Kat Collins.
BCFM.
Hello, Bristol, and welcome to BCFM's politics show, Friday Drive Time. I'm Tony Gosling, and in 2 weeks' time, the 1,600,000 people living in the Avon and Somerset Police Force patch will be embarking on something of an adventure. Since it was formed in the 1970s, the force and its budget have been overseen by a police authority made up of councillors from Bath, Somerset, Gloucestershire and Bristol, as well as members of the public. That joint responsibility is about to be transferred into the hands of one person who will be we will be electing every 4 years. This is a decision made by the LibCon coalition government, and unlike with the mayoral elections, there was no referendum. We were just told. So, this week, I've invited candidates from the three main parties and one independent member of the old police authority, that's Sue Mount-Stevens, to lay out their vision for policing the region. On to that in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows of 3 degrees Celsius and dry. This weekend, highs of 10, sunny on Saturday, but a bit more cloudy on Sunday. Next week, highs of 11 Celsius, some light showers at the beginning of the week, but generally a fairly sunny and dry week. Next weekend, that's the 10th and the 11th of November, highs of 7 Celsius, cloudy with some light showers. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So, this week, we depart from our usual news review and go on to the heart of one of the central issues in the region, how Avon and Somerset Police do their job as they spend our money. Before we introduce the four candidates, here are some facts on the force. Their budget in 2012 to 2013 is £275 million. So average Band D households pay £168.03 for policing through their council tax. 6,000 employees of the police force police those 1.6 million people, making Avon and Somerset the sixth largest force in England and Wales. So, to introduce our candidates, and we'll start with Ken Maddock, who's the Conservative candidate for the Police and Crime Commissioner. Ken is was the leader of Somerset County Council and is a Mendip District Councillor. Ken may suffer from what many are saying, that is that the Conservatives don't actually mean Conservative anymore. Lots of things are changing under the LibCon alliance, and the national policies are to cut. So, Ken, if you can introduce yourself and explain, are you going to be here to cut the police? That's what the Conservatives are doing nationally.
The main objective is certainly a cut, but it is to cut crime rather than cut the police. Because when you cut crime, you actually cut distress. And in cutting distress, you cut the misery caused to ordinary people who are victims of crime. When you cut crime, you you actually cut the stress on the judicial system and you therefore cut the costs. So there will certainly be financial cuts, but I think we can address them in that way.
Okay. Are you trying to distance yourself from Westminster at all? Because we've got Lord Green in the Cabinet at the moment. He was the chairman of HSBC when $7 billion was being money laundered by the Mexican drug cartels. The Senate committees have fined HSBC $1 billion for that, and yet he's still sitting in the Cabinet, a Conservative, at Westminster.
Well, I think that's a pretty tenuous link with the conversation we're having this evening, if I might say so. We're here to discuss Police and Crime Commissioner candidates in Bristol, in Avon and Somerset.
Well, I'm saying, would you distance yourself then from the government at Westminster?
I actually don't know the details of the case that you've described, but if there's wrongdoing, it needs to be followed up and punished.
OK. So what's your vision for the role?
The vision for?
The role of Police and Crime Commissioner.
The role is to cut crime. And the way we do that is, firstly, by getting a high number of powers devolved from Westminster, devolved from the Home Office to a local level. And we have those powers and that influence devolved to one single high-profile local individual who will be democratically accountable. I think they're very substantial changes, more powers coming locally and democratically accountable to the people who live in the area. I think that's a wonderful change, and I'm completely sold on the idea.
So what experience do you bring to the job? Why should we vote for you?
Well, my experience in the past has been, I've been in business all my life, so I'm very used to handling large budgets like the one that you've just referred to, and larger ones, by the way. I've been involved in very large businesses and small ones. I've grown them and shrunk them. I've opened new ones and I've unfortunately had to close failing ones on occasions. But I do think the business experience is very helpful in controlling the budget. Further to that, I've been leader of my district council, Mendip District Council, for 4 years, and for the past 3 years I've been leader of Somerset County Council, and that brings a new slant to my experience, namely the public service slant. And I do think that the techniques and the experience I've brought from the private sector and applied in the public sector for the public good actually make my background a very good fit indeed for this new job.
And you were listening to Ken Maddock there, who's the Conservative candidate for Police and Crime Commissioner. On now to the independent candidate, that's Sue Mount-Stevens. She's been on the Police Authority. She was Vice Chairwoman of the Monitoring Board at Bristol Jail. And she is, as I said, an independent candidate. She was a Bristol magistrate for 15 years and Vice Chairwoman of the Independent Monitoring Board at Bristol Prison. Sue Mount-Stevens, people know your name through the Mount-Stevens Bakery, and many will think you're a failed businesswoman. What makes you think that you won't fail doing this job?
I have no intention of failing, and I don't consider I'm a failed businesswoman either. We sold the business in 97 when it was still a very profitable concern. It did not go bust till 6 years afterwards when it had been transferred twice ownership. So as a family, we sold it as a thriving business. And it was when we had 90 shops and over 1,300 staff. So it was, you know, it was a good profitable business, which is why several people wanted to buy us.
OK, so what's your vision for the role of Police and Crime Commissioner?
Well, the reason I'm standing as an independent is that I feel very passionately that we need to keep party politicians out of this role. It is, the police are impartial. As a magistrate, I have been impartial without fear or favour, and I think it's absolutely right for the police commissioner to also to be impartial and not to have any party politicians involved. I think we need to be able to listen to the priorities from the residents, and we don't want it to be filtered in any way by a political sieving to make sure that it fits into someone's belief in how they're going to run the system, and that's why I'm standing.
But Sue, everyone knows there is a political angle to policing. I mean, aren't you in denial really saying that the political parties shouldn't be involved in that important role of overseeing that police budget?
No, I disagree, Tony, completely. I think it is a political role because, in as much as it's political because we're spending taxpayers' money, and obviously the whole point is making sure that every pound is spent efficiently, effectively and wisely. But it is not a party role, and there is no space for either a Conservative or a Liberal or a Labour candidate to be up in this role, because it is If you think about it, there is nothing party political about policing. It is impartiality that must be continued.
Okay, so what about your experience? What experience do you bring to the job? We've heard you've already been on the police authority. What else?
Okay, I've been 15 years as a magistrate. I've been chair of adult cases, youth cases and family cases. And I have been on the monitoring board at Bristol Prison, making sure that prisoners are being treated fairly and the police authority as well. I mean, I've also worked in voluntary sectors. I've worked in Systems Advice Bureau and in the Community Health Council. So from that point of view, I've worked in the public sector, the private sector and voluntary.
Thank you. That was Sue Mount-Stevens, the independent candidate. Now to John Savage, Dr. John Savage, I should say, a Labour candidate. John is behind something called Bristol 2050, one of the people behind it, which calls for cheap, extensive public transport, good housing and jobs for all by the year 2050. Mr. Savage said, in relation to this, the vision has an aim that Bristol will be the first city in the UK that does away with poverty. Although how he intends to do that is not so clear. Maybe we'll hear it later. He stepped in after Labour's Bob Ashford was found to have a £5 fine back in the 1960s for trespassing on the railway, despite the fact that one of Avon and Somerset's assistant chief constables right now has still not been vetted. John is an unrepentant merchant venturer. The merchants have been criticised for financing the slave trade in the 16 and 1700s, where 17.5 million people were trafficked across the Atlantic and 2.2 million died on the way. The merchants profited from those estates afterwards. John also runs Business West, the region's Chamber of Commerce up at Lee Court, as chairing the University Hospitals NHS Trust, which covers all the central Bristol hospitals, overseeing a budget of about £500 million. One wonders if he would like to run the Great Western Ambulance Service too, when he will be in charge of all the blue light services if he gets elected as the Police and Crime Commissioner. So, John, what's your vision for the role?
Well, first of all, I'm not a megalomaniac, so I don't want to run everything. I think it's more than... The emphasis gets placed on crime all the time. It's the Police and Crime Commissioner. And I rather like the sort of thing that's coming out of America just lately. I know they've used it before, but first responders. The police are part of our first responders. They do much more work than just dealing with crime and fantastic support for the community in when it's in dire extremis. So my vision is that we go on improving the service as it has been remarkably improved over the last few years. And I know that it's got to be done with a reducing budget. And I've experienced that same very great difficulty in the health service. We have a fantastically reducing budget in spite of promises made by government. It's a difficult thing to do, but I think with lateral thinking, with a business approach, it can be done. But it's about maintaining and continuing to maintain and improve what I think has been shown to be a very, very good service.
So how do you square this role in Business West with doing this job as an independent, looking out for members of the public? Because there are a lot of pressures with companies like G4S at the moment on bringing private businesses into the police. I mean, surely those private businesses see you as their man to do that, to actually help privatise our police force.
No, not at all. I mean, I'm simply the chairman of the Bristol Chamber of Commerce and Initiative now, which is one of the owners of Business West. But I've always been involved with bringing private resource into making the city better. As you know, we've invested over the last 25 years through the Bristol Initiative large sums of money into improving things. So this is the business, this is the good corporate citizen side of business. Many people know that I'm passionately opposed to privatisation of anything. I'd renationalise public transport tomorrow if I was the Prime Minister. So there is no chance of the privatisation or creeping privatisation of the police force, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, we're also joined... That was John Savage, who's the Labour candidate, also joined by Lib Dem candidate Peter Levy. He is the Liberal Democrat councillor for Horfield and, like Sue Mount-Stevens, also on the current police authority. He may suffer from the Lib Dems' low approval ratings nationally, and as a former military policeman himself who served for 6 years, may be seen to be too close to the police to be really batting for the public. Pete Levy, what's your vision for the role?
Thank you, Tony. I think that's an interesting point with regards to being too close to the system. Sue and I, on the police authority for the last 2.5 years, have held the Chief Constable to account, and I think that's what the residents and the public across Avon and Somerset would expect us to do.
What about my question about the being a military, an ex-military policeman? Because, you know, you could be seen to be almost a policeman yourself, so not really able to distance yourself from the force and to act in the interests of the public, more as a policeman.
I think there's two sides to this argument. I think, first of all, I do know what it's like to have served in a police service, and I think that we've got in Avon and Somerset we've got an excellent police service, police officers, police staff, and volunteers who do a superb job. And there aren't many of us that will put our uniform on and go out and do the job that they do. This government has provided them with food for very low morale with Windsor and Hutton reports. The biggest changes to policing for the last 80 years, and I think that yes, we do need to hold them to account, but we also need to support them.
Okay. Now, I'm also joined by Gus Hoyt, who's the Green Councillor for Ashley Ward here in Bristol, and we'll start with a knotty topic. That is last year's, what would have been termed the Tesco riots, and the way that those were policed, there was a tremendous amount of controversy about that, particularly the fact that the police decided to do this particular operation on an evening just before Good Friday, when a lot of people were out celebrating, a lot of people were out in the streets drunk, this kind of thing. So, Gus, can you just maybe put a question to begin with to all our four candidates about the Stokescroft disturbances last year?
Thank you, Tony. You actually brought up a lot of the points that I was going to mention myself. So I'll cut to the chase and just ask all the candidates here quite simply, not to defend the police officers who are on the front line. We all know they obviously did a very good job on the night. They did what they were told. But I would like to know, as the police commissioner, how would you have handled it differently from the top?
Can we start with you, Pete, and go round?
Yeah, fine. How would I have handled it from the top? It's the Chief Constable's job. It's a good point, actually, Gus. I know that there was a lot of residents' concern at the time. It's an operational police matter, so I think at the time, with the intelligence that was provided, that has to be the Chief Constable's decision. It will be the Police and Crime Commissioner's responsibility to be the voice of the residents, to hold the Chief Constable to account, to make sure that the why and the wherefores are explained fully. At the time,
I think maybe I should add at this point that the cost of policing through a Freedom of Information request 2 weeks ago or so has shown that the cost of it was £465,000. Police themselves admit it went badly wrong, and there were 12 different police forces involved in it. Avon and Somerset, Devon and Cornwall, Dorset, Gloucestershire, Wiltshire, South Wales, Gwent, Hampshire, West Mercia, West Midlands, Thames Valley and Dyfed Powys. So with the cost of it, I think this is one of the things that the public want to know, Pete, is was it right to spend nearly £500,000 on such an operation?
Look, I don't know whether it was right. I wasn't there at the very heart of it. I wasn't responsible for the day-to-day practical police operations at the time. I'm glad that actually that's passed. What we have done, Sue and I have both been involved with this, we did scrutinise complaints against the police, and I feel that a lot of positives have come out of that. At the time, I was a police officer that came to St Paul's in the early 80s on the nights of the riots, so I know how that affects communities. But I do think that we need to look into that, and I believe that the police authority and the police have to make sure that we learn, rebuild those connectivities, and actually engage with the communities.
Okay, Ken Maddox, can you answer that specific point, really, about that Gus has put there about the way it was policed? How would you have done it better? Or differently?
I'm not sure I'm qualified. I think you're getting a large measure of agreement around the table on this one in particular, because it is a police professional operational matter. You can say that if there were questions raised by the public about how it was handled afterwards, that the police authority should have taken that up with the police service. And wanted some very searching questions answered. As Commissioner, I would certainly want to follow up any widespread dissatisfaction with the way an operation went. But on the night, it is for the Chief Constable to conduct it.
But the public will be looking to you, Ken, to make sure that the money's spent wisely. Do you think it's right to spend nearly £500,000 on an operation like that?
I really couldn't comment on the amount of money that was spent and what was achieved by it.
OK, before we talk to Sue and John, Gus...
Just to be a little bit more specific as well, on the night in the question, there was one individual who threatened to petrol bomb Tesco's. I have lived in America for a very long time, and when you do have an armed situation like that, you normally have one or two minivans nearby to grab the individual concerned, and you rush them off, not invading an entire community. That is something I think people of whoever here is elected will have to deal with and will have to be held accountable for.
And I do think the main thing really is, you know, people have a right to protest, and that must be preserved. On the other hand, they need to protest within the limits of the law, and that needs to be preserved as well. And that's the balance of the Chief Constable to strike on the day. Now, he should be given proper guidance beforehand, and if something isn't done in accordance with the guidance for without good reason, then there needs to be some sort of inquest afterwards.
OK, now on to Sue Mount-Stevens, who's the independent candidate for Police and Crime Commissioner.
One of the things that we did after the disturbances was we dip sampled all the complaints that happened, and there were several that we as a police authority were not happy with, and that was there was a numerous complaints about the fact that some of the residents couldn't identify the collar numbers for some of the officers. And after investigation, it was discovered that because there were so many other forces there, they had their collar numbers in different places. Okay, and we made a report to the police, to Avon and Somerset, and now it is. And also, there were some collar numbers that were covered up with flak jackets and other things. And now, I think in future disturbances, collar numbers now have to be easily identified. In fact, when we had the EDL march, I actually went down there just as a lay observer, certainly in no official capacity, to make sure that all the officers that I came across were all able to be identified, and they all had their collar numbers and were easily identified. So that was one of the issues that came out. The second issue was that some phones were misappropriated, that the officers were not clear on the rules and regulations about obtaining mobile phones, and that we've now changed the training. I think one of the things that, so I think the police authority did investigate. I think as a PCC, what I would have done now would have done an official report into the number of complaints and made that available to the public, because with all communication, it's a loop. Just the fact that the police authority did it, if we don't tell anyone that we've done it, it's a nonsense. So I think that's what I would do now, is make sure that the residents know what has been achieved.
And what about this question of the £465,000 and whether it's appropriate to spend that kind of money on an operation where Gus has said here may have been appropriate for just literally one or two minivans to go in and arrest somebody and leave?
It is operational. It is the Chief Constable's duty and responsibility. It is not for the Police and Crime Commissioner. They're very different roles, and I do not think that it is right ever for the Police and Crime Commissioner to delve into something that is so operational and so immediate as that was. I think we've got to also clarify that there were 2 days, I think, of those disturbances, with a week apart. Am I right in?
That's correct, yes. There was the initial riots on, I believe, the 21st or 22nd, and then 1 week later there were further disturbances, but that wasn't caused initially as the spark was the first time.
I remember the first one, and I think it is important also to be aware that with the first one, it obviously involved a lot of innocent people, because there was no one knew that it was going to happen. I think on the second one, I think that was slightly different. I remember as a magistrate being aware of these facts, because on the second one, there were certain groups of people who went down there in order to make trouble.
Okay, now, John Savage, Labour candidate, how would you answer the question Gus has put to us? How would you have done things differently from your point of view if you were Police and Crime Commissioner?
Well, let me be as clear as the other candidates. This is an operational matter. So hindsight's a marvellous thing. It gives you great vision. But the purpose of post-mortems is to improve things. We have to be clear that any potential for civil unrest, I speak just as an ordinary citizen, but I've seen it. Remember, the thing that brought me to my job was the 1981 riots in Toxteth. the job that I took up in Bristol. The total unpredictability of the potential for riot, and riot is a criminal act, is something that is almost impossible to measure in advance. I must say one thing. I don't believe any chief constable is going to willfully spend vast sums, any sums of money, against a diminishing budget without some forethought. Of course, and I think in a riot situation, which is what it was, the trouble is that all sorts of innocent people get hurt disproportionately. But the role of the commissioner would, in a position like this, to do a proper post-mortem and to try to understand what are the cultural changes we need to make, both within the force itself, but also in people's attitude to the way policing is expected.
Just to clarify as well, I was on my way home at 9 o'clock from a friend's leaving doing Queen Square, and the first officer I actually met who was directing traffic was carrying a loaded pistol on his leg. When I inquired whether he was carrying a loaded firearm on the streets of England, he said, "Of course I am, mate, where have you been?" Now, that was my first contact with police on the night at about 10 to 9. I would hope that if whoever here wins, whether you take responsibility for large-scale actions like this or not, you make sure everyone is fully trained, and you don't move into a community, barricade off everyone's neighbourhood roads, and then be surprised that a riot happens.
John, can you just answer that specific point about firearms? That's an interesting one. And you know, obviously the budget, you have some power over the budget, and to what extent the police are liable to spend that on new equipment like firearms and training for them?
You can't ask any of us to comment on firearms. No firearms were used. Some officers are...
Luckily not used, no.
No firearms were used during that. The question of when and where police officers are armed is a matter of great care. So, you know, I think that's... You're just being inflammatory about this. There is a cultural problem. And, you know, in any large group of people where you expect young men and women to be aggressive enough and tough enough to deal with quite awful conditions, and yet we want them to be, you know, teddy bears as well. You have to expect that there will be tension.
So, do you want to answer this question about firearms, particularly on that night?
I don't know is the answer. I think that as far as the Chief Constable, the operating group will have made a decision about that. And if they... Isn't it easy to look back at these things with hindsight? But I think if... What would we do differently now if we were a PCC, which I think is the real question? And I think I would then stand up to the residents and explain what happened. And I think that it is really important for the residents to understand the decision-making about why firearms were in use. And I don't know, so I'm not going to guess. But I think it's all to do with standing up and taking ownership of those decisions. And I would be very happy to stand with the Chief Constable at any meeting to explain to the residents what the information was and to explain why that was done.
Ken, Conservative candidate.
Well, it's a matter of balance again, really. You know, on the one hand, the police are people. We can't expect them to be superhumans. They're only people like the rest of us. They're highly trained and highly qualified and professional people, by and large. And you can have a choice when they go into a situation where the threat is usually far from clear at the time that they prepare and go into the situation. You can have a choice of saying, we'll take just enough strength in to deal with this, though we don't actually know what the threat is. Or we can take a little bit more than we think we'll need. Or you can take a little bit less than you think we might need. And I would go for the little bit more than we think we might need in general terms, because they are people and because they do have a duty to keep the peace for the rest of us. On the other hand, if they've been excessive or heavy-handed or in some way unlawful or unreasonable, then people should certainly make a big song and dance about that. And as a PCC, I would want to know about it. And if they're right, I would want to champion their cause.
Lib Dem candidate Pete Levy, what are your thoughts on the use of firearms in those sorts of situations?
I've been out on patrol and I've been armed, not in the UK, but I'm aware of the level of responsibility that entails. I wouldn't have thought, as as I did when I was out on patrol. That from the chief constable down to armed officers, they take that level of responsibility lightly at all. I think the important thing is to remember that we're discussing this as potential PCCs in an environment where there was in existence a police authority. Now, Stokescroft, for example, is a vibrant, entertaining, unique environment with some solid community leadership. And as a representative of residents, with hindsight, were that situation to develop again, I would expect the PCC to be out there before we got to that point, a long time before we got to that point. We knew there was unrest. We knew there were issues around Tesco. And I think it's the PCC's job to liaise with those residents, with the community leaders, so that we can feed back to the police and stand up for the residents in the same way that we would be expected to justify and have explained to us police operations.
Okay, I'm going to leave the final word on the Tesco 2011's Tesco disturbances back in Easter to the local councillor, that's Green councillor Gus Hoyt. Gus, what do you think of what you've heard?
Well, I've been happy to hear some of the answers, very unhappy to hear certain other ones. It's nice to hear that with hindsight, some of the candidates here will be willing to work with the community before something like this will happen. We were predicting civil disturbance there for a good month beforehand. It was clear as day that something was going to happen, and we can't, you know, personally, from someone on the ground, I couldn't believe that the first moment we saw anything happen, it was the basic invasion of Stokescroft, which is what it felt like. And I was there at the time, as I say, on my way back from a friend's farewell party in Queen Square. It was all very civil. I had my bike with me, and I was confronted by quite a lot of aggression, and it was very obvious something was going to kick off. I just hope that whoever wins here today does really look back as much as they do forwards, and something like this doesn't happen again. Let's not forget that, of course, it did happen in Stokescroft, you know, not 200 yards away from where the disturbances happened in the 80s. So I think something else will happen, especially with all the cuts in the future, and I hope we are really prepared.
Thanks very much. That was Gus Hoyt, who's the Green councillor for Ashley Ward, which contains Stokescroft, where the riots happened last year. Now, on to a much more general point. I'm going to ask you all to answer. I think I'll start with you first, Sue. When the police are prioritising what they do, what are your own priorities? Because there is a tremendous amount of choice. There's lots and lots and lots of different criminal offences out there that the police can choose to pursue. What would your priorities be in what you're pointing the police towards concentrating on?
I have attended many residents' meetings, and one of the subjects that always comes up at every single resident meeting that I've attended is antisocial behaviour. That is something that eats into the heart and soul of the community, and that is one of my main priorities. I think it's such an enormous topic. It's not something that the police can tackle by themselves. We've got to tackle it with a multi-agency support. So that's why one of the things that I'm very keen on is having these antisocial behaviour almost intervention teams, where we don't just go and move on a group of people, not necessarily youngsters. I'm not going to stigmatise youngsters. A group of people who maybe are making noise, because what we've got to the point now, we've got residents who are telling me that they are scared of walking the dog, they are scared of their kids going into the park, they're having their night sleep disturbed. That's not acceptable, but neither is it just some good enough just to move people on. What we've got to do is actually look at the reasons that they're there, and that's one of the things that by using an antisocial behaviour intervention team with maybe housing, social services, etc., that we can look at some of the causes of this, and so that we can help the help residents. My second priority is violent crimes, particularly against women and girls. One of the key statistics that have come out from Bristol Rape Crisis is that only 8% of women are reporting when they have been raped or seriously sexually assaulted. Now, that is not the tip of the iceberg. That is the tip of the iceberg. And the reasons that for some survivors, they will not, they will never disclose, and that is, of course, at their absolute right. But when I've spoken to survivors, I think one of the two things they tell me is that, one, they don't think that the police are going to take them seriously, and secondly, that they don't think they're going to be believed. Now, I think that that has got to change, and that is a cultural change, and that's what that would be my second priority. And my third is burglary, where we can do much more working with the community, and so I want to increase detection rates, but I also want to work with communities, with Neighbourhood Watch, Crime Stoppers, and there's various other organisations, so that the community know that there have been a burglary in their area and that they can take precautions against it. I was speaking to a resident only a few weeks ago who, it was 15 years ago, she was burgled, and she still now, every time she goes home, she peers in her window to see whether she's been burgled again. Now, she is still living as a victim, and that is not acceptable.
That was Sue Mount-Stevens, independent candidate. And I would point out also, Sue, there's a lot of people have been talking recently in the national press about young people not being believed when they've been abused as children. So I think you've hit on a bit of a nerve there. John, we've got, I think it's 6,000 staff, 6,000 police support workers and community support... community support officers and actual full police officers themselves. And there's a tremendous number of offences out there. Where would you want them to concentrate?
Well, without any doubt at all, one of the key jobs is the protection of ordinary folk, the ability to keep them from being dealt with aggressively or nuisance to being burgled. I mean, the prime concern of people that represent the people should be that the vast majority of people are protected, and also that they can have a feeling of reassurance that the service is giving them that. So that's my number one, whether it's increasing ASBOs or finding a different way to deal with young people, and I think it is different ways that we have to find. But the vast majority of people who work hard, who gain small wealth as they go along, deserve to be properly protected. So that's number one. I'm still particularly concerned myself about the effect that drugs and alcohol have on our community, particularly town communities, city communities. So I'd be very interested in what more could be done again with that. But it's much more, I think, in the future about how we perfect the partnership working with all of those folk who work their socks off in the voluntary areas trying to help these things to be done better.
Okay, Pete Levy for the Liberal Democrats. Where would your priorities be? As we've heard, we've got a big budget here, loads of different offences. Where do you think the police should be concentrating on? Which crimes should they be concentrating on?
I think, first of all, one of the major issues that's come back from surveys that we've conducted, residents want to see police. They want them to be visible. They want to feel safe as well as be safe. So I think that we'd want to... I would certainly maintain warranted police officers and add to PCSOs and support them. I think crime type wise there's an enormous level of crime around drugs, and I think that, you know, we need to, as the police are already, get in there, make life difficult for the drug dealers, but actually treat drug users, treat that as a medical issue rather than a criminal issue. Provide as many exit points for people to get off of that treadmill. There's the illegality of drugs means that we're seeing an increase in some very poisonous material on our streets, and we don't know what that is. And I think we need to tackle that. I think, as Sue rightly said, violence against women and girls, it covers a multitude of offences. It covers hate crime, honour crime, domestic violence, and that also includes men. Obviously, there is a proportion of men that are victims as well. And I think that it's working with communities as well and voluntary sector organisations rather than just the police. And also, Sue and John have alluded to, I agree, antisocial behaviour. But actually, it's, as the police have already done, identify repeat and vulnerable members of community that are victims of antisocial behaviour, but actually going to the other end of the spectrum where one person's antisocial behaviour is actually just some kids hanging around where because there's nothing for them to do. So I think we need to identify that, we need to engage with them, and so those would be my priorities. But actually, another additional point is to make sure that we've got a proper cohesive line of communication so that residents know what we're doing, and the police know what the residents want them to do.
Pete, this may be a bit cheeky, but I mean, a lot of people that live in and around St Paul's, and I'm sure Gus will know this as well, he's still sitting by the side of me, people that live in that area know where the drug dealing is going on. It's going on quite openly in the street. I mean, surely it makes more sense to be dealing with the drugs as they're actually coming into the city at a higher level. So how would you propose to try and do that?
That's already being done. I think there are cross-force collaborations within the police that are already tackling that level. But actually, it will be the responsibility of the Police and Crime Commissioner to produce the Police and Crime Plan. So that's actually working with the Chief Constable to look at where police resources will be. What I'm suggesting is that we make that, rather than one Police and Crime Plan for the whole of Avon and Somerset, that within that we include local knowledge and area-specific police and crime plans, so that we do tackle just those sorts of issues. But actually, I think it's working with local communities as well, so that we can identify where those hotspots are, because they're not there all the time, they do change, and so that we can react accordingly.
Okay, Ken Maddox, we've got quite a lot of talk about urban policing. You're actually a kind of a rural chap, aren't you, from Somerset. So can you give us your thoughts from your point of view of the broad spread of different kinds of criminal offences, where you would like to see the police concentrate?
Okay, there's quite a few questions in there. To take the rural thing first, all I would say about that is a crime is a crime wherever it's committed, and every section of our community is entitled to proper protection, regardless of where they live. And I would certainly want to see that happened as Police and Crime Commissioner. In the last 6 months or so, I have been on thousands of doorsteps, especially in this city, but all right across the patch. And it's very clear to me that what's coming through, what people are telling me on doorsteps, the two things, both have been mentioned, one's antisocial behaviour and the other is drugs. There are some people who think that the war on drugs has been lost. I don't accept that, and I don't think it ever should be accepted. So they're the two principal messages coming back to me. Overriding all that is my determination to cut crime in the first place, not to keep treating the symptoms after it's happened, but to stop it from happening in the first place. There are a number of ways we can do that, by getting our properly trained, fully warranted officers out onto the street, by cutting the red tape and getting them onto the front line where things happen. We can review the operations that they do by means of, you know, if you have a look at a crime, you can see that there are allegedly up to 1,000 different things that happen between a crime being committed and a sentence being meted out. Now, if we can shorten the number of steps from 1,000 to 500, 300, 200 maybe, that will shorten the entire judicial process. It will mean less pain for potential victims, and it will mean less cost for the police force. And the other thing I would do for the police is to give them the proper tools to do the job. They have no business sitting back in the police station having to write up endless reports and ticking boxes. They need the best available electronic gadgets to help them to do the job, not just for a piece of executive jewellery, but stuff that will help them to prevent and detect crime. So antisocial behaviour and drugs is what I'm hearing, and cut crime is what I'm intending to do.
Before we totally get off the subject of drugs, which we've had all of you been talking about, certainly it's been proved in London with the Stephen Lawrence case that police officers there were taking two salaries. They were taking a salary as a police officer, they were also taking money from organised criminals. Is there anything that you think needs to be done in the Avon and Somerset area to make sure that's not happening? We'll start with you, Ken.
I mean, if that's true, then those guys need to be suspended immediately, tried, and if found guilty, they need to be dismissed and punished for what they've done. It's completely wrong.
Pete?
Within Avon and Somerset, I've not heard that as a member of the police authority, but I know that there are robust steps in place to monitor police officers, and as I say, I haven't heard that.
Sue?
I think if there are any bad apples, then they will need to be rooted out, and certainly they bring everyone else's name into, I think it's important that we have very good officers, men and women who go beyond the line of duty, and where there are some bad ones, then we need to root them out, and I would obviously support that. But generally speaking, I know that there are, within the police, there are very thorough ways of checking on the police, and I don't believe that there is too many.
John Savage.
Well, in any large group of people, 6,000 people is a lot. Unfortunately, they're bound to be odd ones that let the side down. And I think that if they do that, they're criminal, and they deserve rather stricter judgment than anybody else, because they should know better. I mean, I don't forgive criminals easily, but quite a lot of criminals, quite a lot of drug addicts are victims themselves. We've got to adopt quite a different whole social approach to some of the difficulties that produce crime. But for a person who's in the know, who has the knowledge of being a police officer, if they break the rules, they should be punished severely.
That was John Savage, the Labour candidate. Now, Marina Morris has been out and about on the streets of Bristol this week to find out whether you think a US-style police and crime commissioner is a good idea for Bristol. And if so, who you'll be voting for.
Do we need a police and crime commissioner? And what do you expect from the role?
No, there's a tendency or a risk that they would be likely to put policies in place that would suit their re-election agenda rather than proper policing. I'm slightly suspicious about it all. I would hope that they would govern or they would oversee policing for the entire community, both looking at putting in place policies that would reduce offending by improving relationships between the police and the local areas, by looking at ways of helping with restorative justice techniques perhaps, and looking at some means of joining the gap between offenders and the community as a large.
I don't know a great deal about it, to be honest. I've heard about the elections coming up, but I've not read anything about what's going on there, why they want to do this. So
police commissioner can control budget and hire and fire the chief constable, but apart from that, that's all I know.
So it becomes a political position rather than a sort of a police position. I'm not sure that's the right way to go, personally.
Yeah, we do, because at the end of the day, if there's no one doing it, then someone up at the top of the power is just going to get the say. So if nobody from the streets has got their input, then it's not really a community thing. So yeah, commissioner's a good idea.
Isn't the economy more important at the moment? Getting the economy back on track? That's where the direction should be, shouldn't it, in the focus?
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think we do need them. The police force should not be politicised. There should be no political involvement. The accountability necessary, I think, comes from learning from the job, not from who made the last mistake. I mean, the biggest problem, I think, with the political system as it stands is the fact that as soon as someone gets it wrong, they're out of their job, and there's never any chance to learn from that mistake. The police and crime commissioner post is completely irrelevant to this country.
Will you vote, and why?
But I will vote because it's a democracy and that's our responsibility.
Probably not, no, because I don't know enough about it. No, and I don't know who the candidates are, and I wouldn't be able to make a judgment about them even if I did.
That's right, I've seen who the candidates are for my particular area, and I know the names, but they're names that mean nothing to me. I know nothing about them. I suspect I probably won't vote.
I won't vote, and why? Because I don't really know how voting works with the police commissioners, and I haven't really done my research, so I wouldn't know who to vote for. It'd be a bit pointless me putting in an anonymous vote for someone I don't actually know anything about.
I don't know who any of the candidates are.
Got to go online to get the details. Yeah. Or ask them to send them through. They should have sent them through, first of all.
I am planning on spoiling my ballot paper. I don't believe in not voting. I think that everyone should vote. I have seen absolutely nothing in terms of literature, in terms of who I should vote for. It seems like the candidates themselves aren't even taking this seriously. I know nothing about who I should be voting for.
Are you informed enough about the candidates?
We've not been given any information through our door at all, no. There is a website that we can go on, I believe, and we'll check that out before we vote, but we've heard next to nothing about them. My wife's heard some interviews on the radio. I've not had that opportunity because I've not had the chance to listen to it at the time. So, yeah, we're going to have to do some more investigating online, but no, in terms of generally providing us with information, it's been very poor.
I'm not personally, but maybe that's my own fault. I haven't really looked into it. But I think if you want to find out about candidates, you can do some research on. Yeah. Undoubtedly, they're on the internet. The candidates are availability on. There's a website, I think, isn't there, for the PCC elections. But are people that interested in finding out who these people are and what difference they're going to make? I don't know. I suspect that a lot of people are going to be like me, and they don't actually know what the purpose of the role is.
Probably don't care either.
Nah, probably not. They could do a lot better to give us information and tell us about, like, they should set up, like, I don't know, like community meetings or something like that.
I'd say there's not enough information around.
Yeah. No, like I say, they don't seem to be taking the distribution of information seriously enough. They know there's going to be a low turnout and nobody really wants this, so they're not bothering. That's what it appears to me.
Drive Time on BCFM, 5 till 7 on 93.2 FM.
Well, fascinating vox pops there. Thanks very much for Maria Morris from those. And in a way, sort of puncturing our illusion that everybody knows this is going on and everyone's enthusiastic to vote about it. First of all, the voting system is going to be something called the supplementary vote. Voters will be asked to select their first and second choices. If no candidate wins half of the first preference votes, the two candidates with the highest number go forward to a second round of counting. In the second round, ballots with the first preference for a candidate that didn't get into the top two will be reallocated according to the second preference. Whichever of the top two candidates has the most votes after the second preferences have been allocated is declared a winner. Now, I don't know if you're like me, that sounds almost too complicated to be true. The idea being that if there's no obvious winner in the first round, that your second vote is counted, and all if you haven't voted for one of those top two candidates, your second vote is discounted. I think that's maybe a simpler way of putting it. But let's go round, starting with Ken Maddox this time, the Conservative Police and Crime Commissioner candidate. Ken, there seems to be a lack of awareness, and many people there saying that they don't actually want this role.
Yes, OK, fair enough. It's something I've certainly encountered personally. Just be a little bit critical about some of the media who seem to spend an awful lot of time telling us that we don't know anything about it and we don't know it's coming, when if they actually told us about it, as you just did on the supplementary vote, thank you, then I think it would be more helpful to people generally. On the topics that were raised there, on the supplementary vote, it's not my preference. I think first past the post is simple and everybody understands it and we're used to it. But supplementary voting is what we've got, so that's what we'll deal with. As far as the job itself is concerned, I do think there are good things to this. I think it's, as I said at the beginning, this is a local high-profile person who will be running this operation, who will be the PCC, and that person will be accountable to local people, and that person will also have powers devolved from central government. I think they're good things to support the job, and it enables a person with imagination and determination to exhibit leadership and enterprise and imagination and get better for our local people here. But I mean, the truth is, even if you don't like it, it is coming. And I'm sorry there are only four candidates for you to choose from. I wish there were more, but you know, four is, you could take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Now, four of us are here tonight to try and lighten the darkness, if you like.
Okay, Pete Levy, Lib Dem, what do you make of what we heard from many of members of the public there, saying that we didn't really want this, we don't want this, is this being something that's just being forced on people?
I completely agree with most of the comments that I heard. It's a ridiculous waste of money, costing in the region of £75 million, money better spent on healthcare, on education, on continuing to recruit and retain police officers and frontline services, transport infrastructure, the list goes on. Actually, then when we realise that people don't know, members of the public don't know what's going on, the government decide to launch a media campaign, which if you watch and believe the television, if you don't vote for a police and crime commissioner, young people are going to start punching other people on buses, young people are going to start kicking in bus stops. I think the thing is we always said that it was a bad idea because police authorities have worked generally. We could tweak them, we could make them more engaging, and following on from issues like Stokes Croft, actually, where can we improve that line of communication? And if you're going to have a police and crime commissioner, then appoint them, make them go through the normal process. But to go through an election, I agree with Sue's point to a degree about the politicisation, but actually, the government have given us an election system, so therefore it automatically becomes political. But what we need to do is to make sure that we don't get an overt politician in this place. My three fears were someone in Bristol who doesn't know anything about rural policing, a politician, and someone with no hands-on experience.
Thanks, Pete Levy. John Savage, Labour candidate, what do you make of this apparent apathy about the entire process, that this is something which is being forced onto us?
Well, I don't want to be misunderstood by my comments, but I've got to make them. First of all, it's sort of barking, isn't it? I mean, the simple voting system has worked very well in our democracy for a long time, and this second vote thing is really odd to me, so I don't like that. The party that I'm standing for was opposed to the concept of police and crime commissioner. I've always thought that it's very dangerous in any of these senior positions to put yourself into a situation where you're relying upon the shoulders of one person, whether it's a man or a woman. So it's slightly barking, really. And I have a particular resentment for the way that successive governments come up with a grand idea, and then after a while, instead of reshaping it and moulding it and making it better, we stop everything, get everybody off the thing, repaint it, and then put somebody on again. You know, why the Americans have a great knack of finessing things over years. We have to stop everything every time. So, you know, as a prospect, it was born badly. And I want to put in another point. It seems to me that it's all part of a concerted effort by some people in Whitehall and Westminster politics to do down the power of the chief constables. The chief constables have served this country very well, it seems to me. There are good ones and bad ones, but by and large they're good. There is definitely an undertow of trying to break their influence, and this is part of it, and I don't like that.
Oh, we just had the resignation of the former South Yorkshire chief constable, for example. So there are a few bad apples amongst them.
Of course
them.
There are.
Now, Sue, before the 6 o'clock news, what's your thoughts about this fact that a lot of people don't want this election?
I think a lot of people don't want it, but probably more don't even know about it. I've spent whole days campaigning and I don't come across anyone who even knows about it, let alone who are the candidates. Do you know, I think if the government could put this genie back in the bottle, they would, but it's too late. We are where we are. And I think the exciting thing about this role, so let's try and end on a positive. The exciting thing about this role is that it is much wider than the police authority. It's going to look at preventing crime, working with crime reduction, trying to reduce crime by looking at re-offenders so that we can prevent crime in that way, and then the criminal justice system, so that the whole umbrella is going to come under the remit of the Police and Crime Commissioner. And I think that's the exciting thing that we take on.
Okay, now we're coming up soon to the 6 o'clock news, but I'm going to ask you all four very quickly on one particular topic, and that is tasers. These are very sensitive, electronic, high voltage things which are used by police forces across the country and have been extremely controversial. Can we just have like a quarter of a minute from you each on what you think of those and what you would do about them, starting with you, Sue?
I don't think that they should be given to all officers. I think that there are occasions when they can be used for the safety of everyone involved, but I think they are rare.
I wouldn't like to be on the receiving end, that's for sure.
Okay, Pete Levy.
I take advice from operational policing from the Chief Constable, but to make sure that when they are used, they're used properly.
And finally, you, Ken.
We need to have any apparatus that's appropriate to the job. If it's not appropriate, we shouldn't bring it. But if it's needed, for sure.
You're listening to BCFM's politics show, Friday Drive Time, just coming up now to the Murdoch News at 6 o'clock. Afterwards, a review of the week's news, and then we'll be back to discussing with our four Police and Crime Commissioner candidates.
This is BCFM 93.2, the community station for Bristol. Listen live online at bcfm.org.uk. BCFM News from the Sky News Centre.